Everybody says it's real. Today I take a step into a time and space
of peace
and possibility. And here I'm gonna stay until I find my place, my true divinity.
Once again, for being here with us this evening on Occult Science Radio, I am Curtis Davis, a.k.a. The Illuminated One, and tonight we have with us a very special woman whose work I've been following for quite some time. She is the author of a new book, The Voodoo Hoodoo Spellbook, and is also the founder, editor-in-chief, and publisher of the magazine Hoodoo and Conjure Magazine. And for those of you who are unaware of who I'm referring to, I am talking about Denise Alvarado. And tonight we are going to be talking about voodoo, hoodoo, and other spiritual slash occult slash esoteric practices. And I've been looking forward to this interview for quite some time. So I'm going to start off by thanking our sponsor, TUN, the Occult Network. That's www.theoccultnetwork.com. We come by and see us. We have a plethora of free content, but first and foremost, okay, our real deep, in-depth occult content is located on our premium channel, TUN Premium. And there on TUN Premium, you will find the most in-depth esoteric content that you won't find anywhere else on the internet, and you're definitely not going to find it in mainstream media. You can also find the Occult Network on YouTube, Twitter, and Facebook. And if you want to keep up with what's going on Occult Science Radio, as well as what's going on with the Occult Network, you can find me on Facebook as well, Curtis Illuminated One Davis. So come by, become a friend of mine, join our Facebook page, follow us on Twitter, and follow us on YouTube, and then you'll be plugged into what's going on with the Occult Network and Occult Science Radio. So please call in with your questions this evening, family, at 646-649-1987. That's 646-649-1987. And if you have a question or a comment for Denise, don't forget to press number one on your keypad. That way we can see you on the switchboard and take your wonderful questions and comments. So having said all that, it's time for us to welcome our newest family member. This is the first of her many appearances to come, Denise Alvarado. Denise, how are you, my friend?
I'm doing great. Thank you for having me on.
Oh, yes. I should have had you on here 100 times already. But that's okay.
Well, it's not like you haven't tried.
Exactly.
you've been trying.
Exactly. And I finally got
right.
You here. And so this is the first of many, many appearances to come. But this is your first time with us, Denise, you know, and many people are joining us for the first time. So, and believe me, I'm very envious of you because I wish I'd grown up in the same, with the same background that you had, you know, as far as voodoo and hoodoo, you know. But please give us some background on yourself, you know, and let us know what led you you to this path and how you developed such an expertise, you know, within the voodoo and hoodoo tradition?
Well, it's the kind of thing where, you know, if you're born and raised in New Orleans, you would have to be living in a bubble to not have any kind of exposure or contact with the tradition, because a lot of the things that we experience just as part of New Orleans culture is rooted in African tradition. So, you know, that being said, and then also having, you know, some family who were practitioners in various degrees, it was just something that I grew up in and with. I've shared before that my earliest memories when I was like 5 years old on the bayous with my auntie, and she introduced me to the spirits and to the mysteries. And she used to use candles, so she taught me about candle magic. And one of the first things she taught me about was spirit communication. And she was a spiritualist as well as a root worker. And she taught me about taught me my first seance, actually.
Oh, so, I see.
Using candles. Yeah. She taught me how to manipulate, you know, the flame and communicating with the spirits in that way. So my, you know, my earliest memories go way back. And it just was just part of how I grew up. So, yeah.
Ah, I see. I mean, I've got to get over to New Orleans, you know, because, you know, I know the culture is very, very strong there. Now, when we talk about voodoo, Denise, you know, I mean, it's become so synonymous, you know, with Haiti, you know, and here in the United States, New Orleans, of course. But as you just briefly mentioned, you know, just a short time ago, it really has its deep roots in Africa, correct?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And for, you know, New Orleans, we, you know, there's a common misconception that voodoo came to New Orleans via Haiti, but that's not correct. Voodoo came to New Orleans directly from Africa. So, and then of course we had, you know, the Haitian influx a couple of hundred years later. So, our first, you know, influences was with the Africans themselves.
Really? Ah.
And then, of course, it changed. Well, yeah, what? Yeah, yeah. Once it got here, you know, it changed from about when it first, I guess when it first arrived was around 1719, and around that time to about the almost the early 1800s, it was voodoo. It looked a lot like it was in Africa. The difference was there was like a merging of different African traditions. So, you know, because of the different, you know, the different people came from different areas in Africa. So, you know, and we had, you know, those traditions, and then with the influence of the Native Americans, because the Native Americans were enslaved before, you know, by the time Africans got here, there were, you know, Native American slaves already. And so they were kind of thrown together and ended up finding some commonalities, and we, you know, voodoo started melding in that way, evolving in that way to incorporate the different spiritual traditions of the different African groups along with the Native American groups. And it really has a unique flavor because of that in New Orleans.
I see.
And then to add to that, the, you know, the influx of the Haitian, influx of the Haitians, which was around, I don't know, 1803 or 1809, something like that. And then, of course, they brought their spirits with them. So we have, you know, you'll see the Haitian spirits along with African spirits and Native spirits in New Orleans voodoo.
I see. Now,
which is why you'll see Orishas and you'll see Loas also. You'll see both in New Orleans voodoo.
I see. Now, what exactly is the difference between voodoo and hoodoo?
Hoodoo is often defined as a magical practice, a spiritual practice. It's like voodoo. It's like the voodoo without the religious aspect of it. It's more easily adapted by people of different religions. It's basically, you know, the manipulation of roots and herbs and things like that to improve or influence life situations and that kind of thing. But, you know, hoodoo can also, it can also be traced to Africa. So, but when it got here, again, it lost the religious aspect.
I see.
In New Orleans, it's different than other areas of the country because there's not such a clear delineation between hoodoo and voodoo. A lot of what we call voodoo would look like hoodoo to other people because there just wasn't that separation for a lot of us. The African spirits and also working the roots, those kind of things go hand in hand.
I see. Now, you know, over the years, you know, voodoo has really gotten, a bad rap. You know, and we all know why, because we're living in a society that has been, you know, heavily influenced by, you know, religion, or what I personally call it is organized distorted doctrine. You know, so naturally, anything that doesn't have anything to do with Jesus or the Prophet Muhammad is going to be considered demonic or satanic or, you know, any of those other names. But, you know, I mean, I come from a West Indian background. And, you know, my mother's side of the family, they're from the U.S. Virgin Islands. And, you know, you got Puerto Rico over there where they practice, you know, Santeria. You know, and when I began to really look into voodoo and Santeria, you know, and everything, I said, oh, I see why, you know, the religious folks really worked so hard to really demonize these practices, because they realized that if people started studying voodoo and hoodoo and Santeria, you know, then they would be basically studying a philosophy that has some real power, as opposed to, you know, Christianity and Islam and what's basically more commonly taught in our society that keeps you powerless. You know, would you agree that that's why voodoo and hoodoo and other quote unquote occult practices has gotten such a bad rap?
I think that's a big part of it. Absolutely. I mean, yeah, any of us who practice any of the indigenous-based alternative religions, we know that, you know, and I'll speak for, you know, voodoo and hoodoo, they are empowering practices. They're empowering traditions. They definitely put the power with the individual, and then we work in tandem with the spirits to effect change. So, yeah, that's very different than giving everything over to an all-powering God. I would agree that's a big part of it. And then, of course, you know, give anything that looks sensational for Hollywood and you know, they take it and run with it. And then there's a bit, you know, there's the history also of demonizing all indigenous peoples, anybody who's, you know, brown or black or not white, you know, just the good old savage label discredits any kind of tradition as superstition. You know, that's a big part of it too.
True indeed. You know, what I understand, you know, a lot of the slaves when they came over here in order to really disguise their practices, you know, in fear of retribution from the slave masters. You know, a lot of it was hidden in, you know, behind the, you know, it was, they incorporated a lot of Catholicism into it. Is that true?
That's true, but that was also a colonial strategy to convert indigenous peoples, Africans and Native Americans, to Christianity or Catholicism. You know, you see a lot of Catholic elements in New Orleans, and that's because of the Code Noir, which is, you know, the Louisiana's Black Code, which was written to control the behavior and religious practices of slaves and free Africans. And, of course, the first thing that the Code Noir stated was to order all the Jews out of the colony. And it also served to reinforce the notion of status in terms of skin color. So it created lateral discrimination almost between people of color. So, you know, lighter skinned people have more privileges than darker skinned people. And that was an intentional strategy in the Code Noir, and you can read it. I mean, I've got it listed on my Hoodoo and Conjure group on Facebook. Because it's amazing to me how many people don't, you know, they're not aware of that you know, Catholicism wasn't just this happily adopted tradition into voodoo. It was forced, and people died if they didn't. People were abused if they didn't conform. But, you know, it's also a testament to, you know, the adoption of Catholic elements is also a testament to the resiliency of indigenous peoples and African people. How clever, you know, to recognize the similarities between saints and the Loa or the Orishas and associate them with, you know, the saints and be able to worship their gods, their pantheon of spirits through, you know, under the guise of Catholicism. Never believing that, you know, St. Peter was Papa Legba, obviously knowing that there were two different spirits, but of course not, you know, being open about that to begin with, and then eventually, you know, being able to just, I guess, absorb some of the spirits and those elements, and they just became part of the New Orleans voodoo tradition.
I see.
Now, obviously not for everybody. I'm talking in generalities when I say, you know, voodoo practitioners also incorporate hoodoo. You know, there are people who don't. There are people who just, you know, go for the religious aspect and don't, you know, aren't hoodoo practitioners or root workers. There are people who are more, you know, just Afrocentric and not, don't incorporate the Catholic saints and other, you know, like candle, I think the candle magic comes from Catholicism because of the use of candles and services and things.
I see. Now,
again, yeah.
Yeah. Now, you know, there's a lot of people that's tuning in for the first time, and you know, voodoo and hoodoo have been such a mystery. And I mean, as we both previously stated, you know, the media has a lot to do with that. Okay. And you know, as I began to study, you know, voodoo and Santeria, you know, and hoodoo, you know, I took it upon myself to, you know, more or less, you know, do what you're doing, you know, to educate people, you know, more about the beauty of voodoo, you know, and hoodoo, you know, and it's not the, you know, it's not what the media has been telling us that it is. So, you know, when people hear you say Orishas and Luas, you know, what exactly, you know, I know what you mean. You know what you mean. But, you know, I mean, I've even had people ask me prior to the show tonight, you know, to really ask you, they would like to know, like, what is an Orisha? Well, you know, what is a Lua? You know, so just give us a brief breakdown of what is meant by an Orisha and a Lua.
Well, it's pretty simple. It's the Orishas are the African deities, the African spirits, that, you know, are African in origin, and the Luas are they're also spirits in the voodoo and pantheon. So, you know, they function as kind of like intermediaries between an all-powerful but distant God, creator, and they function similar to, like the saints do. So you have a need or a want, and you would petition a saint to bring that message to the Christian God, and that's how, you know, the saint works as a communicator between the two. The difference is, I think, with the Christian God is you can pray directly to God, and you know, obviously Christians don't believe you have to pray through a saint. That's a Catholic belief. But with African, with voodoo, the creator is too busy doing other things, kind of off in the distance. And so, you know, we work with the spirits for our daily issues in life, whatever it might be. That's what they're for. And the different Luas have different areas or domains of life that they help people with. Excuse me.
I see. Before I proceed, I'm going to take a quick question from the chat room, and it's a very good one. You know, and this question is,
okay,
does incorporating voodoo with hoodoo pack a more powerful and concentrated punch, so to speak, because it's a religion and you have actual spirits that you work with?
I think it just depends on the individual person. I mean, you know, people who practice hoodoo, it's not that they don't have their religious beliefs. You know, there's a lot of Christian people who are hoodoo practitioners. So, you know, they work with, you know, directly with God or even like the angels. They work with the Psalms and things like that. And there's a lot of Protestants who are hoodoo practitioners. Not in New Orleans, though. In New Orleans, we see more of, you know, Catholicism. I personally like having a broad, you know, family of spirits to work with. And I'm not Christian personally. I you know, have a very indigenous traditional religious belief. So I'm more inclined to work with the Luas and the Orishas and the native spirits. And, you know, native-defined creator as opposed to a Christian-defined creator. With hoodoo, you have, you know, in voodoo there's magic also. I think there's a misconception, you know, that some people think, well, if you're, you know, practicing voodoo or if voodoo is your religion, then you don't have the magical aspect like hoodoo. That's not true. There is absolutely magic in voodoo as the religion as well. But, you know, hoodoo gives you more, I guess, a broader realm of magic to work within, I should say.
I see. Now, just 2 years ago, you know, I was involved in a debate with several people. And, you know, it was really upsetting to me, you know, because what I gathered, you know, in these debates is that, you know, a lot of people were utilizing these two particular instances that, you know, in their mind, really gave voodoo a bad name. When we look at New Orleans and we look at Haiti, within the past couple of years, both places, you know, really suffered, you know, some real devastation. You know, the widespread earthquake in Haiti, and of course Hurricane Katrina in New Orleans. And many people, you know, came to me and was like, Curtis, you know, you see, you know, I told you that voodoo stuff is a bad thing, you know, because, they're practicing voodoo over there in Haiti, and they had that devastating earthquake, you know, and they're also practicing that voodoo stuff in New Orleans, and they had Hurricane Katrina, you know. And now you've been doing this a long time, Denise. You know, please clarify that and let everybody know it had nothing to do with the voodoo practices. It basically was just, well, how do you want to call it, Mother Nature, or just the earth shifting, or what's your take on that?
That's a sad state of affairs when people want to blame, you know, indigenous religions and on, you know, natural disasters. Look, the thing is, Mother Earth is always constantly growing and changing, and unfortunately, we inhabit more of her than we had in the past. Therefore, when natural occurrences happen, we're in the firing line. We're there. You know, we're the target. It has, in my opinion, nothing to do with, the practice of voodoo. I mean, if that was the case, there's been natural disasters, you know, forever. So, you know, you can't blame it on that. I mean, what about the earthquake in Pakistan?
Exactly.
You know, in 2005. You know, what about the cyclone in the Bay of Bengal in 2008? What about the earthquake in China? There's no voodoo there, you know.
Exactly.
What about the Indian Ocean tsunami, and, you know, that affected so many people in 2004? Sri Lanka, Indonesia, Thailand, India, Bangladesh. You know, that has nothing to do with voodoo. That is just the natural process of the earth growing and changing. Now, some of it may be have to do with the fact that we inhabit so much of the earth and we've abused a lot of things. You know, pollution. You know, there's the global warming concern that has changed atmospheric processes, and you know that may have something to do with triggering some of this stuff. I don't know. What I do know is it has nothing to do with religion. It has everything to do with nature. And unfortunately, it puts us in our place. People seem to think, you know, humanity seems to think that, you know, we rule over over Mother Earth. We can rape her as much as we want and nothing's going to happen. We can pollute her as much as we want and there's no consequences. You know, that has more to do with it than any kind of religion.
I agree. You know, and I'm glad you really cleared that up. But, yeah, you know, you have a new book that's out right now, the Voodoo Hoodoo Spellbook. You know, tell us more mm-hmm. about that, you know, and what it entails and what we have to look forward to when we all purchase that book.
Well, the Voodoo Hoodoo Spellbook is about my experience with New Orleans voodoo and hoodoo. In New Orleans, we tend to call, you know, you'll see the words paired together, you'll hear the words paired together, voodoo, hoodoo, hoodoo, voodoo. That's because that speaks to what I was talking about before, where the separation between the two isn't seen so clearly. So people will say voodoo, hoodoo, hoodoo, voodoo to describe the tradition. It's basically a rewrite of a book that I had written in 2009 and self-published. And I got a deal with Red Wheel and Wiser Publishing, and they wanted to put it out again. And so I was able to actually rewrite the whole book, which is great. It's almost like a whole new book. It's got all kinds of stuff that was in it that wasn't in the original book. But I talk about the basics of New Orleans voodoo, you know, where it comes from, the history. I talk about the voodoo pantheon of spirits. I talk about the saints and the prayers and the psalms and the different things that people, yeah, it's like a primer as well for people who may not have any background in it. So I'll talk about the different things that are useful to have to start, practicing hoodoo or root work. I talk about candle magic. I've got a lot of formulas in there for anointing oils and spiritual oils, conjure oils, formulas for inks, floor washes, spiritual waters, spiritual baths. I've got a whole chapter on Grigri, which is probably one of the most misunderstood traditions. And, of course, a lot of spells. So there's like over 200 spells. And over 100 different New Orleans formulas for the different powders and oils and things like that. So it's I'm really proud of the book. It's a good book. I'm glad I was given an opportunity to rewrite it, because it was so, you know, when you write a book, a lot of times you might go back later and say, man, I wish I would have said something different or, you know, done it differently. So. It was really a blessing to be able to rewrite it in a way that I was able to add the things and take things out and rearrange it in a way that made better sense to me.
I see. You know, let's talk about some of the things that are, you know, some of the things that are used in voodoo and hoodoo practices. I mean, the one that's most famous that everybody sees, you know, that has been, you know, bandied about in the media is some person sticking pins in a doll, you know,
right.
And, you know,
right.
But, you know, it goes far deeper than that. You know, as you, some of, you know, things you just described, the Grigris, you know, and things of that nature, you know, let's talk about, you know, the Wanga dolls, the Wanga, you know, Pekes, the Black Cat Juju, Indian mm-hmm. Spirit Hoodoo, you know, what are some of the, you know, the, someone who, if they really begin to incorporate voodoo and hoodoo into their lives, in other words, like someone like yourself, you know, who's been doing it a long time, what are some of the things that, you know, an experienced practitioner would utilize, you know, on a daily basis in their practices?
It is a way of life. So it's kind of, it's not things that we would use. It's just things that we do. Like dolls, for example, not everybody, you know, does doll conjure. But, you know, it's and it's basically a form of fetishism, which comes from Africa. I think that's where we got a lot of it. And then, of course, you have, you know, the poppets from European folk magic and witchcraft that also influences, you know, we had those influences in New Orleans as well. But, you know, people have been doing image magic for since the dawn of time, you know. It's not a voodoo specific tradition or way of dealing with the world and people, you know. I mean, we see, you can find doll magic across cultures throughout time, and I've written about that in a couple of my other books, Voodoo Dolls and Magic and Ritual, and the Voodoo Doll Spellbook. The Voodoo Doll Spellbook, I gave a survey. Basically, it's spells from all over the world, different cultures, using dolls, you know, as part of their magic, even though I call it the Voodoo Doll Spellbook. Actually, in academia, that's the preferred term for doll magic. You know, they call them voodoo dolls. So even when you talk about the Greek colossoi, for example, which are the dolls that are used alongside the curse tablets, you know, it's written about as a voodoo doll. We all know that when we write it as a voodoo doll, that it doesn't necessarily mean it's from the religion of voodoo. But that's kind of taken the popular term, and it's been adopted in academia. So that's why I use that term for that particular book. But, you know, in New Orleans, voodoo dolls kind of came into popularity, I think, in the common psyche of the everyday person through, you know, the Marie Laveau tradition. She had quite a reputation for using dolls to psych people out for all kinds of things. you know, So,
I think that's probably where we get kind of a reputation for voodoo dolls. And then, of course, with the tourist trade, I mean, you know, there's dolls everywhere in New Orleans from that. But in terms of practitioners, you know, like I said, some people, you know, use dolls and some people don't. A lot of people use dolls in the voodoo religion to represent the spirits that they work with, similar to, you know, Catholics will have statues of saints on an altar. We might have a doll of, you know, whatever spirit it is that we work with or have a relationship with. So the dolls will act as a vessel where, you know, a spirit can reside. Dolls can also be made as gree-gree. That's kind of a part of gree-gree that people don't often seem to understand about gree-gree. It's more than just a bag of different things. Gree-gree can be a powder or even a liquid. It can be words. It can be, you know, made in the form of a doll. You know, gree-gree is a whole magic system in and of itself that came from Africa that we've retained in New Orleans voodoo.
Oh, I see. Tell us a little bit more about that. You know, because, I mean, that's you know, that was something that I was curious about, you know, that I meant to ask you about.
Mm-hmm. Well, the first influx of slaves included many from Senegambia, and in that culture, gree-gree is a big part of that culture, their spiritual tradition. So, you know, that in and of itself is direct evidence of the influence of, you know, the African, you know, tradition that's retained in New Orleans voodoo, it's gree-gree itself. Gree-gree, there's the traditional African gree-gree, and then there's the gree-gree that's associated with the Muslim Islam. The priests, called marabout, they would create, and they still do, gree-gree, largely that consists of passages from the Quran that are empowered, you know, in their specific way, and wrapped up in little leather pouches, and oftentimes they're attached to, like, say for example, someone is having trouble with fertility. Well, they might write their passages from the Quran, you know, and consecrate it, and then close it in either a metal or leather pouch, and it's usually sewn all the way closed so you can't open it again. And then they would tie it around that area of the body to, you know, increase the chances of, you know, fertility. So that's one way that is used. Mm-hmm. And then gree-gree's kind of gotten its own, it's kind of expanded in its definition in New Orleans to describe New Orleans voodoo. Some people call New Orleans voodoo gree-gree just because it's like this one big, like Dr. John says, one big funky gumbo of cultural and spiritual influences.
I see. For someone who wanted to really begin a study of voodoo and hoodoo, you know, where do you suggest that they begin? You know, for someone who has they basically their only exposure to it has been through mainstream media, but they really wanted to begin an in-depth study as well as become a practitioner of this. Where do they begin?
I always encourage people to go to people who are actual practitioners who are from that culture, who grew up in that culture. And, of course, you know, that's limited, but thanks to the Internet, we're able to disseminate a lot of information. you know, I have, we've recently started at Crossroads University, and we teach, you know, we're offering courses, and we teach people, you know, the traditional way of hoodoo and root work. We talk about, you know, not just the history, which I think is very important. I think people need to understand hoodoo and root work in the context of history. Otherwise, it's just merely cultural appropriation. You know, we need to give honor to the ancestors who suffered in order for us to be able to have this particular radio show today.
Right.
So the first thing we do is teach about that. We teach about the cultural context, the historical context. We emphasize ancestral relationship, ancestor reverence. And then we teach the traditional way of, you know, gathering. You know, I have people go out and get their own roots and herbs. You know, I don't require people to buy anything from me or buy anything from anybody. Although we do have some kits with some of the classes to make sure people have access to some of the roots and things that we're talking about. The focus of the classes are, you know, how do you make this yourself? Where do you go? What do you have around you? So we're very applied courses. You know, we teach people how to apply the concepts in their lives and empower them to be, you know, to be able to just think of what, you know, how they can come across a solution with just what they have in their house for a work that they might need, you know, to improve their financial situation or a relationship or whatever. There's so much that can be done, and there's so much commercialism, you know, of hoodoo and root work, and voodoo, of course, nowadays. So I think it's real important that anybody, any of us who teach it, to really get to, you know, teach the authentic aspects of it, not just teach, you know, how to sell it. You know, how to buy a candle and how to fix the candle with bought sachet powder. You know, I think it's there's something to be said about, you know, how do you make that powder yourself and how do you get the ingredients from what's in your kitchen cabinet, from what's outside your front door. You know, what do you use if you know, you, if there's an ingredient that you need that you don't have? Because that's a big part of it, you know. Slaves, Africans, indigenous people didn't have money to spend. They had what Mother Earth provided, and they used that in, you know, in conjunction with the natural forces and spirits to make change. So that's you know, that's the focus of what we teach at Crossroads University.
I see.
We teach people really how to be swampers.
Exactly.
That's what we call it down south. It's a traditional way of what we call root worker down south is a swamper. That's a person that gets out in the damn swamp and finds those roots, you know, pulls them up with their hand, you know, knows how to do it correctly, you know, makes their offerings and that kind of thing. Now, that's not to say you can't buy stuff on the internet. Obviously, I have a business. I don't want people to stop buying from me. You know? But I do want my students to know how to make it themselves. You know, I buy stuff from people. I buy stuff on the internet. That's fine, but I also know how to do it. You know, I also create, you know, the things that I sell myself. So, you know, there's convenience. We have the convenience of the internet, and we have convenience of Botanicas, and even the local grocery store. There's so much you can get from a grocery store. You know, and that's one of our assignments is we have people actually go to the grocery store, and we have people that will never look at the grocery store the same again. In terms of hoodoo, you know.
I see. You know, you also write a great magazine, you know, Hoodoo and Conjure. You know, please tell us more about that magazine, because, I mean, I'm in your group on Facebook, and anybody who really wants to follow Denise's work, you know, I strongly suggest that you join her Hoodoo and Conjure group on Facebook. There's so much information there. I mean, I've learned a lot just from that group alone. But tell us about the magazine, you know, because you have some great articles in there, tremendous, tremendous articles in there.
Yeah, yeah, I am very, very proud of Hoodoo and Conjure Quarterly, which was the original name of the magazine. We've now since gone to just Hoodoo and Conjure because I just simply have not been able to get four issues out in a year. And we're looking more at two a year, so we just changed it to Hoodoo and Conjure, and it'll be a special edition. But Hoodoo and Conjure, it's a great, I'm just so proud of it. I'm so happy with how it turned out. I've got some wonderful people as contributors. I just pitched the idea to some folks, to start this magazine, which actually I like to say it's a magazine that reads like a book because it's really book quality. It's book print. It's not a flimsy magazine. And everybody I approached was on board with it. I've just been really blessed with the people who are involved in the project. One of the main reasons I started Hoodoo and Conjure was to help stimulate the economy in New Orleans with regards to our spiritual practitioners. We still need a lot of help down there. Recovery is ongoing. There's still so much that has to be done. And, one way that I could do that is to foot the bill for this publication and focus on New Orleans specific traditions and related conjure traditions. So, I'll write about New Orleans traditions. I got Eileen Pastania, who writes about, New Orleans folklore. Madrina Angelique, she writes about Southern conjure and Santeria and Palo. And we've got Byron Ballard. She's our resident Appalachian hill folk hoodoo person. Carolina Dean, who's just a tremendously prolific writer about all sorts of conjure and hoodoo. Aaron Leach, he's our ritual magic expert.
He was on the show.
Was he?
Yes, he was here last week.
Yeah, he's He's great. He's just fabulous. And,
yes, he is.
You want a real academic informational read, check out his articles. Dorothy Morrison, she's our wicked witch. Wicked in a good way. She's great. Matthew Venus, he's another conjurer. Very good writer. And we've got Witch Doctor Utu from Canada, who's with the Niagara Voodoo Shrine and Ritual Drummers in Canada. So he's part of our international conjure contributing writers. Winsome, she's from Belize. Actually, she's from Africa, but with multiple initiations in African traditions, and we're just really pleased to have her give us that perspective as well. And then we've got, some wonderful artists, Karen Miranda Augustine, Inga Kimberly Brown, Andrew Goldfarb, Ricky Pistanio, myself. I've done a lot of I do all the layout and a lot of the graphics, but clearly I was unable to do all the artwork myself, nor do I want to. I want to be able to have the magazine be a place where established writers can contribute and give their perspective on things. And then I would also like to have it be a place to showcase new writers and new artists or people who haven't had, an opportunity to be published. And our contributors have different, varying levels of experience with what they write. Some of us are more academic, and then there's others that are just, they're practitioners. And, I think it's important. I've been trying to get a balance of the two, where we have our professional writers and then we have just our practitioners who are no less important in terms of contribution. We want both perspectives. We want to give the reader as much as we can. Of the breadth and depth of Hoodoo and Conjure. And then we have a historical manuscript in each issue, lots of charms and formularies. The folklore is so big in New Orleans and Louisiana. I couldn't imagine having a publication that didn't showcase some of the folklore. So that's great. We have a new column, Myth, Magic, and Motorcycles, which Kaz Mraz from Studio Voodoo, he does. He travels around. He travels around the country to different places. You know, he drives motorcycles. They give him motorcycles to drive. He gets to go test them out and everything. And one of the things he does for us is go to different places that are, have spiritual, you know, reputations for hauntings or whatever. And so he'll be reporting on some of those places from a, like, photo, moto journalist perspective. So we've got a lot of good stuff, a lot of good stuff. Dr. Snake, who wrote the Voodoo Spell book, he's a great storyteller and fabulous writer. He's given us some articles to do, and it's all it's a community effort. It really is. I mean, nobody's getting paid for this. I'm basically footing the bill for the whole thing, so we really appreciate every sale that we make to help fund, you know, the creation of this publication.
I see. Well, and believe me, I've got to, you know, because, I mean, I've heard so much about it, you know, and I've been so busy. But, you know, from what I'm hearing about the magazine, you know, I'm definitely going to start paying more attention to it. You know, I mean, I learned about it as well through a another very good friend of mine, Andrea Vitamus. You know, I'm quite sure, yeah, you're familiar with Andrea. You know, very nice guy. You know, very knowledgeable as well, you know. But, you know, you mentioned something earlier about Palo, you know, which is short for Palo Mayombe, okay? And, you know, it's always been, you know, mentioned in there, you know, with voodoo and hoodoo and Santeria and some of the other indigenous practices. You know, that what is the difference between Palo, you know, and say, and yeah, as well as the similarities? You know, what's the difference between Palo and voodoo and hoodoo? You know, and like I said, what are the similarities as well, if there are any?
Well, I think the main similarity is that, you know, it's an African-derived tradition. Palo, from my understanding, I'm not an expert in it, okay, so, but I'll tell you what I know. It developed in the Spanish colonies in the Caribbean amongst the Central African slaves, I believe mostly of Bantu ancestry, maybe Congo. But, you know, there's different branches of the religion, Palo Mayombe, Kimbanda. And I'm sure there's others too, but like I said, it's not my area. Let's see. There's, you know, they have their own specific spirits. Their altars may look a little different. I know they have ngangas, which are like, or prendas, which are like, you know, cauldrons that they fill with different things, bones and sticks, and they all have their special significance. Now, you might see some practitioners in New Orleans will also have the cauldrons that are filled with different things. But that's true. That's a Palo practice. I believe Palo really has its roots in Congo. I think the people that came from Congo, they were brought to Cuba and Puerto Rico and some of the other, like Dominican Republic, and that's where that religion kind of, you know, formed in its own, has its own flavor and its own, you know, way of doing things. There are different spirits than voodoo, but some of the similarities, like I said, were that it's, you know, has its roots in Africa, but there's also the veneration of spirits of the ancestors and the belief in natural powers and or earth magic. Sort of, yeah, earth magic, I would say. The use of natural objects, you know, roots and herbs, all of that kind of thing that are believed to be infused with powers that are sometimes linked to the powers of the spirits. These things are similar.
I see.
But I think the Nganga is, the Prenda is like the main, one of the main religious tools, which is like a consecrated vessel, so to speak. It's filled with sacred earth and different things, human bones, things like that.
I see. Wow,
yeah.
You know, time flies when when we're having fun. But good, you know, I'm not worried about it because I'm already planning your next visit. You know, because we have so much more to talk about. But as we wind down, Denise, wasn't she awesome, mm-hmm. family? Wasn't she beautiful? You know, that's why I couldn't wait to get her here, because she's so knowledgeable, you know, on this subject. You know what I mean? And basically, to take the spookism out of voodoo and hoodoo and show the beauty of it. But just take some time, Denise, to let us know about your website, Planet Voodoo, your book, and the magazine, and your school, of course, your online school, and any other information mm-hmm. you may wish to share with us.
Yeah, you know, my website is planetvoodoo.com, and that's where I sell my own handcrafted dolls and hoodoo spiritual products. The Hoodoo and Conjure Quarterly magazine, we do have a Facebook group. You need to request membership, so you can find me on Facebook and friend me and let me know that you want to be part of the group, and I'll add you. It's obviously free, and we give lots and lots of free information and advice, and we started that as just a courtesy to our readers. And but you know, it's open to anybody who's interested in learning and sharing. And crossroadsuniversity.com for anybody who wants to check out, you know, taking a course. There's information there about that. It's very very affordable. So I think that's those are the two main things. Of course, if anybody wants to contribute to the cause, Amazon.com, all my books are there. All my books are in the magazine. Just type in my name. It'll all come up. So.
Excellent, yeah. Excellent. You know, not just coming from me, but coming from the entire family, Denise. You know, we want to take time out to just give you a wholehearted thanks for taking time out of your very busy schedule to be here with us on Occult Science Radio. It was such a pleasure. You know, I had a lot of fun. I learned a lot. And, you know, from looking in the chat room, everyone else enjoyed themselves as well. And like I said, I'm already planning your next visit. So get ready. You're going to be getting a call from me soon. And we're going to do this all over again.
Sounds good. I've had a great time. Thanks for having me.
Thank you so much. Be well, my friend. And believe me, like I said, you'll be hearing from me shortly. Thank you so much, beloved. Be well.
You too. Thank you very much. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. And we also want to thank you as well, beloved family, Occult Science Radio family and the Occult Network family, for taking time out of your busy schedules to be here with us this evening on Occult Science Radio. There's plenty of other things that you could have been doing, but you chose to be here with us this evening on Occult Science Radio, and we love you and appreciate you for that. Thank you so much. Tune in on Friday at 5 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, where we will have the man himself back with us. Yes, he's going to be back, and everybody has enjoyed him. Every time he's been here, he has set this place on fire. I'm talking about Santos Bonacci. Okay, if you have been with us for his previous broadcast, then you know what we are for. We are in for some high science. So definitely mark your calendars for that one at 5 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on Friday. And don't forget to visit TUN, the Occult Network. That's www.theoccultnetwork.com. As I previously stated, we have a plethora of free content that you will find very enjoyable as well as knowledgeable. But don't hesitate to become a TUN Premium subscriber, where, as I previously stated, you will find some very in-depth occult information on our premium channel. Our premium channel goes for $6 monthly. As you can see, we keep the price low because we want everybody to get this knowledge. So we have two payment plans. You could either become a Ton Premium subscriber for $6 per month or for $60 annually, in which if you become an annual subscriber, you will get 2 months free. So come by the Occult Network. We have a blog. We have everything. Like I said, it's all things occult, all things esoteric. So once again, beloved family, thank you so much. Join us on Friday at 5 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, and look forward to seeing you again. And as I always say to my beloved family out there, peace, love, and power. And please, please walk with strength. Peace. I'll be